Bentonville School District officials are taking a close look at the schools clustered in and around the downtown Bentonville area. With so much of the district's population concentrated elsewhere, namely the south and western parts of the district, officials are examining how they can create unique educational opportunities in the heart of the city that will compel families to choose to send their kids to those downtown schools. We're going to hear more about that plan from the people most closely involved in this week's edition of the Know the News podcast. Welcome, everybody, to our May 19th edition of Know the News, a production of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette Newsroom. I'm Dave Porozek, your host this week, and I'd like to welcome a pair of guests joining me today. I'll start with Dr. Debbie Jones, superintendent of the Bentonville School District. Dr. Jones, good to see you again, and thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
I'd also like to introduce Kristen Nafziger. She is director of the Region 14 Comprehensive Center. Ms. Nafziger, hello and welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, for the listeners wondering what the Comprehensive Center is and what it has to do with Bentonville Schools, we will definitely get to that. But first, Dr. Jones, I thought it would be best to start with you and let you give a better explanation of what I just tried to say in the introduction. Can you give us the overview of what you're trying to accomplish with the downtown schools and why?
Sure. You said it pretty well, but the district, because of growth with families and enrollment, we really struggled trying to keep enrollment at the same capacity as we're experiencing in some of the outlier schools, because we see the greatest growth occurring in Centerton, the west of the zone, and also in the south where you see Evening Star. So all of those schools like Willowbrook, Osage Creek, Creekside, Vaughn, our newest elementary school, Centerton Gamble, they are approaching capacity and beyond. And our community has experienced this previously. We are no longer that small school district. At one time, we had all of those downtown schools like Mary Mae Jones and R.E. Baker and Apple Glen and TJ and Sugar Creek. And we just don't have the population to support that capacity anymore. And so at least I've been here 8 years. In the last 8 years, we have built we built 10 different schools, not all elementary, in 11 years. And so that kind of shows you how quickly we've had to build. But that construction has occurred outside the central area because that's where the areas are growing. And then we're faced with artificially creating enrollment for our downtown schools. So in essence, what happens for families is we send buses, for example, way out 72. And we have to transport kids into TJ or Sugar Creek, some of the downtown schools, and they may pass to elementary schools along the way. And so ideally, that's not what we want to do. That's what we're forced to do. Or we're forced to do things like have trailers outside of schools. And we don't do that because it's not the safest measure. And it's not really ideal as far as an educational environment. So we want to look at some new ideas, new approaches. I think that we've avoided trying to do this in the past. You may look at this as a magnet school or creating some special type of schooling, because all of our schools are really exceptional. And where we have provided for one, we've tried to provide for all. But I really want to look at this as a new era in schooling in Bentonville schools. Since 2017, I've challenged all the principals to create the story of their school, make it something special. And they have in different ways. Osage Creek Elementary became very much kind of a theatrical acting. Vaughn, when we opened Vaughn this year, it was created to be a STEM school. And it's really just taking a change in perspective. Just because another school creates something special, it doesn't diminish the effectiveness of your school. Does it raise the bar? and force you to get creative? Possibly. And I think that the families benefit in that. So that's where our work is starting. And I can say we're early in the process. We are going to really take a year to do deep study. And so I want you to talk to Kristen in just a minute, but I was insistent that we get a consultant in this process because I want all of our leadership to be forced outside of what we already know. I want us to create the best national model. And sometimes we always go back to what we know, and I didn't want the opportunity to do that. That's one reason we wanted to include Kristen's group. But second, we also want to have a worldly view, what's going on in the nation, and have a third party force us into really getting the voices of all of our community, our parents, our students, and internal staff as well. So that's where we're starting.
Okay. All right. So Kristen, if you could take us through what your role is in this.
Sure. So the federal government, Department of Education, puts out every 5 years a grant program, and it's called the Comprehensive Center Program. And the reason it's comprehensive is that it really means that it's something that the Department of Education funds to help state education agencies and local education agencies in some instances implement all of the title programs that are put out by the U.S. Department of Education in a comprehensive manner. So leveraging different federal initiatives, obviously the new the ESSER funds that just came out with regard to pandemic recovery and accelerated learning is something we've really been focused on. We've been focused on summer learning and out of school time. And then in general, just closing the achievement gap and working on literacy and effective instruction. And so I've been working now for the past 4 years. The Region 14 basically means we serve a set of states, and those happen to be Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas. And I'm based in Austin, Texas. So I've been working with ADE, prior Secretary Key and now Secretary Oliva, to establish a portfolio of basically kind of management consulting or change management projects, which is helping them identify evidence-based practices and then ensure they get implemented with fidelity. And so when this idea came up and Superintendent Jones was looking for a group to be a facilitator, to bring the best evidence and then help her team think through how do we take the best of what's out there and try to apply it here in Bentonville, this connection was really made. And so I think our goal too, a big pillar of our charge, if you will, is to have some sustainability in what we do and to ensure that other places can learn from our work. So one of the things that we've been chatting about, again, this has just been a couple of weeks we've been introduced and we're kind of forming and norming around the plan, is to create a playbook for other Arkansas districts or other districts in the nation. I mean, this is happening. This moving out to the suburbs is also happening right here in my town of Austin, Texas. And so this is not a new or unique issue. So we're excited to dig in. I got to come to Bentonville last week and meet a bunch of folks. And
And so what's the next step here? What can we expect to see first?
I can speak to that. We've talked a little bit about a timeline. And so we're going to start through surveys and focus groups, getting input from our community. And that's one of the most immediate steps. We'll form some leadership teams. We are focusing on starting with Mary May first, maybe Ari Baker. We want to take both through the whole discovery process. We will search out and find the best model magnet schools in the nation. And then we'll take teams of people to go visit some of those, really to just expand our vision of what elementary education could be. If we have the capacity to open both Mary May and Ari Baker as model schools, that will happen in 2024. We will at least open Mary May in 2024. And so we're just starting the process of exploration right now, gathering input to create number one, what will parents really be interested in? But I can envision just on the downtown schools, as we create this effective model, we expand that from those to all the downtown schools. And I think it is, it's quite extraordinary for the district because we're trying to create parent choice in a public school setting. And that's part of the goal as well.
I don't know if you're probably aware of this, Dr. Jones, about, 10 years ago, it was a little bit before you arrived, there was an initiative by the school administration to convert Baker to a charter school, district-run charter school. That was going to focus on STEM, I believe.
I'm aware.
Yeah. Yeah. So is that what you're talking about today, is that sort of similar to that, or?
I don't know that it's necessary, although nothing's off the table, to create charter status. I think that we can do it within the constraints we have now because of 1040 waivers, should we need waivers. But yes, when you talk about a STEM school, that might be one of the options. But that's not the only options. There are so many, and it really depends on what do families want for their children. It could be a language immersion school, dual language school. It could be a fine arts school. Who knows? I think the possibilities are endless. It could be an IB elementary school. Before we really ever contacted a consultant, we tried to drop in and have conversations with various model schools across the nation. There are so many different models. That's part of what the work is. What is the right fit? What will be effective and still show the growth to the degree that we expect in Bentonville schools? We want to create the best possible environment. And here's the key. I want it to be sustainable long after the leadership is gone. So that's why we have to be cautious about doing it well. I can say that unlike the previous attempt, the board is unanimous in supporting this move forward. And it's really good to have that. They're supportive of creating choice for parents, and they're okay with doing things a little differently. We very much have an educated, not that they didn't during that time, but we have an educated board that's business driven. And, you know, you see a little bit of spirit of competition, and that's a good thing for families. And they support that as well.
This comes at a time when school choice is bigger than ever in Arkansas. Is that sort of playing into your moves here?
And it plays well. It plays well, certainly. The landscape is ripe for this. It's not even a main driver. It's just as if, number one, having a board that supports change, positive change, and you have to be cautious. It's kind of like good to great. Sometimes change is hardest when you have an effective system, and we have a very effective system. It's not that we're wanting to change because we have a failing school. It's that we want to change so that we can go to the next level. We can improve, and that we offer opportunities for kids and for parents.
And when you talk about model schools, are there any in particular that you're eager to see? What would you most like to visit?
It depends on who you ask on my cabinet team, which is why we have an outsider, because, you know, one, Dr. Morrow, her daughter, before she came to Bentonville Schools, was in a language immersion school, and she's so supportive of that. Many of our parents are as well, just as we've been in PTO meetings. We have another executive director who came from Osage Creek and very much created the partnership with the Walton Art Center. And so very much art focused. And so that's, I'm not even going to tell what my favorite may be, because I want to protect the process. I don't want to create what I would want to create for a school or any particular individual. I really want the masses of parents to have a voice in creating what they want. And I don't want to assume what parents want. So there is no predetermined model. We've had conversations everywhere from private schools, charter schools, Texas, Florida, Kansas City, Miami-Dade. And I'll tell you that the new secretary, put us in touch with the superintendent in Miami-Dade and said that they have the most robust system of choice within public schools. And so we might look at some of the options they have. It's a massive district with huge enrollment. So they probably have one of everything, but there is quite a bit of work. We want to go when students are present. And so we expect some of those inspirational tours to occur in the fall with the different teams of people.
Mm-hmm. And Kristen, are there particular places that that you can point to that you've worked with that have you've seen success in these model schools conversions or?
Oh yeah, many, because it's interesting you talk about school choice being so big. I mean, I got into this education space in 2001 with No Child Left Behind, and it was all about parent choice, magnet schools programs. And I visited Miami-Dade and writing a piece for the Department of Education. There's museum focused schools, there's history focus. I mean, there's one for every possible thing. And I, one of the things, I'm just sitting here looking at the pages of notes I took from meeting with the student leadership team when I was there. And the students are very clear. They want hands-on experiences. They want to go on field trips and visit new places and learn about the world and have global connections and access to things earlier and more often. And so I think in addition to a model or a theme or whatever it is that the language ends up, I think that also infusing some of what we've heard from these students, which is we want to have new experiences. You know, I think even in a place that is so successful and relatively affluent, kids are still seeking out more things, you know, still seeking field trips, still seeking to go to museums to learn and make connections and meet kids from other schools. Those are just some of the additional strategies that we may want to be cognizant of as we synthesize all this data and then make some recommendations.
And Dr. Jones, is there a financial impact to this project and or have you figured that out yet?
Dave, you know, everything has a financial impact.
Of course. that was a dumb question.
No, it's not. Yes, I'm sure that there will be. We don't know the expanse of that at this time, but we will learn throughout the process. I can say that we've been invited by the Walton Foundation to write a grant for the exploratory portion of this. And fortunately, Kristen and her organization is funded by federal dollars. And so at least the exploratory part, the school visits and all of that, the focus is survey, and there's lots of work that's occurring for the next year. Will mostly be covered by the grant that we're writing for and by the center. Okay. And so beyond that, there are always costs. You know, anytime you have a professional development or if you add a language teacher or whatever, that we're realistic in knowing that there will be additional costs with that. But, you know, for example, with Mary Mae Baker, they have more resources going into the school right now than any other school, any other elementary. They have the highest percentage of Title I funds. Their adult to student ratio is, after you take the admin out, it's one adult for every 10 kids. So we have some pretty incredible resources within that building. Now, it's really taking a comprehensive look at what are our resources? What do we want to do? And make sure all of those goals are aligned.
And I'm sure some parents might be wondering, would this have any impact on attendance boundaries? Does that play into it at all?
Possibly, because the goal is to, there is plenty of space at Mary Mae Jones now, and we hope it takes off and fills up and we have a waiting list. We will have a protected zone for the population that attends Mary Mae now, but the goal is to attract some of the outliers, those families from those highly populated dense schools, Centerton Gamble, some of those, and that they want their kids to go to the downtown school, which, think about it, this school is less than a half of a mile from the new Walmart Home Center. And so I think that that would bring comfort to families knowing their child is right down the street. So I think it'll be in fact, all those downtown schools, they're so close in radius. It's a 5-minute drive from your home office. And so it's really thinking about all of the elements within our community and how can we best serve our community as well.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to mention, either of you, that we haven't covered?
I do really want, we will have an input site, aside from making direct communication with all of our families, but we do want to hear from the community in this process. And I have to talk with the consultant to see when we go live with the site for input, but that will be part of the process. Similar to what we do right now with our rezoning efforts, parents or community members, businesses, I really think that businesses after the pandemic are at a whole new level as well, because they have to think about attracting staff. Having a school that's close to you, having childcare that's close to you, is a benefit for a family. And so they should have a voice in this process. And I hope that they choose to engage with the district through this exploration process over the next year. Our goal and our timeline is to name our model school by November. That's the goal right now. I will tell you that we're super excited about naming a leader for Mary Mae who's going to go through the process with us, and that's going to occur at the next board meeting.
Okay.
Stay tuned. It took really a special leader that can create a culture and that's ready to be flexible and change and lead through the process. So we're looking forward to that announcement.
It's exciting.
Yes.
Lots of things to look forward to. Well, great. I want to thank you both, Dr. Jones and Ms. Nafziger, for joining me today and filling us in on this project. It's very interesting. So we'll look forward to seeing how it develops.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Great. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you're interested in learning more about the Bentonville School District's plan for its downtown schools, catch education reporter Al Gaspany's story on the subject this weekend in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And with that, I'd like to tell you about some more of the other great stories we have coming your way this weekend. As the weather warms and the school year winds down, you know what that means. Area's public pools are preparing to open. Mike Jones has a story on that. Mike also will have a story about the upcoming Bentonville Bike Fest, which has a new date and location in this, its third year. It's shaping up to be a record year at Northwest Arkansas National Airport, and if first quarter trends continue, XNA is on track to surpass 1 million boardings for the first time. Ron Wood will have that story for us. You also want to check out our River Valley coverage on Sunday. Thomas Asente reports on what happened at Tuesday's Sebastian County Quorum Court meeting. Thomas will also have a preview of Memorial Day events taking place in the River Valley. And Monica Brick has a story about water parks opening up for the season in Fort Smith, Alma, and Clarksville. And we'll have great coverage from the world of entertainment. Monica Hooper has a Q&A with the creator of Hadestown, a musical coming to the Walton Arts Center for a 5-day run starting Tuesday. And Becca Martin Brown will have a preview of Death Trap, a play coming to Fort Smith Little Theater in early June. And don't forget, we have the best sports coverage in town. We'll bring you reports on all the high school championship games, including soccer, softball, and baseball. And for the fourth time in program history, the Arkansas Razorbacks softball team is hosting an NCAA regional this weekend. Our sports guys will be all over that as well. All of this and more will be available to our subscribers on our tablet and smartphone apps and at our websites, nwaonline.com and rivervalleydemocratgazette.com. To those of you who are already our subscribers, thank you for your support of local journalism. If you're not a subscriber, I hope you'll consider being one. We even have a special offer for our podcast listeners. Just visit nwaonline.com/podcast23 to get started. You can also click on the subscribe button on our websites, nwaonline.com and rivervalleydemocratgazette.com. Or give us a call at 479-684-5509. Know the News is a weekly podcast brought to you by the newsrooms of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the River Valley Democrat Gazette. Thanks so much for listening this week. Again, I am Dave Porozik, your podcast host for the week. Have a great weekend, and until next Friday, so long.